Dit is Studio Gehoord. Gehoord. Waarin alles wordt besproken dat in menige organisatie onbespreekbaar is. Uw gastvrouwen zijn Jorine Beks en Orlie Polak.
Welkom luisteraars, het is weer tijd voor een mooie podcast. Ik zit natuurlijk niet alleen in de studio. Ik ben er met Jorine.
Hallo Orlie.
En wij hebben een hele bijzondere gast waar we onwijs trots op zijn. Professor George Koolriezer. Voor wie hem niet kent, zullen we even een hele korte introductie doen van alles wat hij al bereikt heeft in zijn leven. Professor Koolriezer is klinisch psycholoog en professor bij het IMD in Zwitserland. Hij is bekend vanwege zijn boeken Hostage at the Table en Care to Dare en zijn wereldberoemde leiderschapsprogramma's. George heeft jarenlang als gijzelonderhandelaar bij de FBI gewerkt. Volgens George zijn de technieken die hij daar heeft geleerd van groot belang en van toepassing voor leiders. George vergelijkt succesvolle leiders graag met gijzelingsonderhandelaars. Beide moeten in staat zijn contact te leggen met de mensen met wie ze werken. Anders kunnen ze nooit het resultaat halen dat ze willen. Door zijn onderzoeken en ervaringen heeft George zich een goed beeld gevormd over hoe effectief leiderschap eruit zou moeten zien. En vandaag praten wij met George over zijn inzichten. Een gesprek waar Jorien en ik heel erg lang naar uit hebben gekeken, maar die we wel in het Engels gaan voeren. So, welcome George.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So George, I think we have a challenge in the Netherlands. We really like to fix things. We are a group of people that believe in control, that believe in that we can make the world according to our imagination. And if the world is not as nice as we want it to be, we tend to make a lot of rules, procedures.
Look at what you've done with water, with the dikes.
Mm-hmm. We build.
And I don't know if you know the company Van Oord. We do a lot of work with Van Oord. We've trained over mm-hmm. their top 150 in secure-based leadership. And they're mostly engineers. They come from a strong engineering water background. You're absolutely right. You want to fix the problem.
Yeah.
And this is the mind's eye of having a vision of what is possible. So that requires a certain psychological safety to do that.
But it also has a pitfall. And the pitfall is that our government also believes that we can make anything. We can control any problem. And they do that by making new rules, new legislation, new measurements of control. So this whole secure-based leadership, I like to talk about a little bit secure-based organizations, they are under pressure. Because if you make a mistake, like Rijkswaterstaat is a big client of mine, they do the dams and the roads and the tunnels and the bridges, you are at the 8 o'clock news. The 8 o'clock news is something we will all watch, the big event of the day. Then you're on the news. And then people of the government will start calling you, writing you emails, not 100. So the pressure is really on. This gives a pressure on those secure-based leaders because everything they decide, everything they give space to, at the end, if it is a fault, it is not the desired outcome, then people start blaming. Then people start having cancellations. We had a lot of scandals in the Netherlands. You probably heard of them. But it's all out and about. It's now on social media. It's on TV. It's on a radio. And that's not only for public figures. It's also for people working in big corporations. And I believe that secure-based leadership needs a secure-based organization.
Well, this is an interesting point, the culture of an organization that you bring up. It does come back to the individuals. When we talk about a caring organization, it's the individuals who are caring that transform into the culture and it makes its way into the behavior of the individuals. So you can see if an organization is toxic. You can see if it's conflict avoidant. You can see that negativity. And it's the people who change the rules of how they work together, interact together, and so forth.
How is if you have so much pressure from outside your organization, like Jorien and I are the boss of a big corporation, then we take their imagination. We have 5,000 employees, Jorien, in this imaginary world. But we have this government that wants stuff from us. They give us a hard time, ask a lot of questions, and they want us to have more command and control because they want results. They don't want our way of leading. They don't believe in psychological safety.
Then you have to watch that you don't become a hostage. This goes to the board. This goes to the CEO, the top leaders, who do not allow themselves to be a hostage to the politician. What you have to do is understand, what do the politicians want? They want results. Okay, you want results? Great. We have to work to get our workforce employed, engaged, and we will defend them. We will protect them. We will undo underperformance behavior, but we will not allow you to take us hostage. So you get into a good dialogue. I worked with a mining company who was about to lose. They got kicked out of one country, and they were working in Mongolia. They were about to get kicked out again because they didn't build a bond with a politician, with the stakeholders, the different groups that were involved. So I taught them how to deal with anger, how to deal with rage. People screaming in your face, you are corrupt, you are da 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 da, and how to be able to engage in a dialogue with 6 months of this ability to start a dialogue, to hear what they really wanted, all the different stakeholders. They were able then to establish a good contract. And below it was the loss, all kind of losses, the fear of losing power, the fear of resources being taken out of the country, lack of respect for the Mongolian people, etc. It was all about loss. And this is what leaders have to understand. When you see resistance to change, just like in a hostage situation, it's always rooted in loss. And this is behavioral economics in action. Behavioral economics found already in 1992 that people are fundamentally irrational. They're feeling beings who happen to think, not the other way around. And loss is the most powerful motivator in making decisions, far beyond benefit. And most people coming from a sales background, they want to sell their benefit, the benefit of their product, their service. No, you have to hear what the pain points are. And many leaders cannot hear the pain point. So we have to create a bond with the politician, even though they are very narrow-minded, and help them understand that we are working together and we're here as a partner. That's the top-level leadership required. But most do not know how to dialogue. Most people do not know how to engage with anger. They avoid conflict.
But that also means that I have to do something with me. Like maybe have an internal dialogue with me. Because if I feel angry and I have anxiety, or I'm really super stressed as a leader, or I am really under pressure, how do I prevent myself from giving that hot potato to the other person? Because that is also a blockade or a hostage for
you
me.
You know what that hot potato is called? It's an emotional trigger. Emotional triggers are the foundation of either de-escalation or escalation, most of the time escalation. So what are the triggers that set you off to say and do things that make the problem worse? And what we know about emotional triggers is we have to then understand what are the underlying emotions. And so how do you get to those deeper level emotions and get people to express them? Loss is that one of those most powerful ones that often gets transferred into anger or into fear. So you have then have anticipatory loss, you have past loss, you have all kinds of triggers of being excluded, being shamed, being blamed. So leaders have to be able to separate the trigger because the present appears not to be the origin. It comes from childhood, comes from adolescence, it comes from previous experiences. Or evolutionary psychology, so that you have a fear of spiders, you have a fear of heights, you have a fear of darkness, you have other kinds of anxieties. Mm-hmm. So we have to be able to disconnect the destructive trigger from the present moment.
Yes, and I was thinking about, because, you know, like the body keeps the score, so you don't even know that you're thinking. So when there's regulating your emotions is when you have the feeling. And something else starts going through your life, through your body. Sometimes you even start shaking. It's not like you're thinking, but your body takes it over.
This is the first step of emotional intelligence. Dan Goldman's work shows the first step is self-awareness.
Exactly.
And then self-control, so that you can make a choice to react. It's just a pattern. It's just a habit. And this is where, as a hostage negotiator, you're having to be trained in all kind of exercises, how to not be triggered, how to be attacked, how to be rejected, how to be humiliated, how to be shamed, and you don't get triggered. Most leaders cannot do that. They want to prove they're right. They want to prove that they've got the best idea. They feel shame. They feel excluded. They feel whatever it might be. But those are never originating in the present. They tend to be coming from the past.
So you have time between action and reaction. It's also with breathing, isn't it? It's like if you breathe in two times very shortly through your nose and then through your mouth, then you get it also. Instead of counting to 10, some other trick.
There are lots of ways. But behind it is the idea that you have to bond. We need attachments. We have to bond, not just to people, to goals, to places, to objects, to pets, to symbols, to places, memories. And we have to be able then to create a bond. But then we have to recognize when it's time to let go or when there's a disruption in the bond. And that's the grief process. The biggest thing we do in our programs is to help leaders become emotionally available, be able to show caring and daring by being able to cry, by being able to go back and access the emotions that are fundamentally there in their life experience. What happened to them in their life that they became the leader that they became? So then they start talking about these events and they trigger all kind of emotion. A common thing is that we had 66 people. We did a grief session, a brain reconstruction session of someone whose brother died during COVID, never said goodbye. And ever since he's been depressed. So he was able to release the grief, say goodbye to his brother through a simple little exercise of how to do that. And he was totally relieved. It was gone. The weight was off his heart. He was actually at risk. His doctor told him, you're at risk because this depression is affecting your physiology. And we had 22 people from Holland there. We saw their reactions. And again, you could see showing emotion. One of the big resistances, doing this in a large group of 66, it looks strange. It's stepping out of the comfort zone. But to not be shameful, after he had gone through this experience, a lot of people, including the Dutch, were saying, but weren't you embarrassed? Weren't you ashamed? Yeah. All kinds of concerns. What happens afterwards? The thing is, what was shameful about being able to cry and say goodbye to your brother and to be angry at COVID, not get to India to see his brother before he died?
I think this is a big challenge. This morning, I was talking to my husband about how do you deal with the loss of a colleague at your work and don't bring it back to your work every day over and over again. And I said, if you don't face the trauma, you will become part of the trauma. And I think this is such a big challenge that you deal with your fear and that you regulate your fear and that you don't bring it to your work every day if you have experienced loss, but not only one time, but several times.
Exactly. And being able to let go. And this was Bowlby's work. This is where the original attachment theory, way back in the late 48, 49, early 50s, he wrote that first book on attachment, then on separation. He created a whole theory on how to grieve. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross picked it up. It was picked up in many different ways. The power of grief as a stressor. When Selye did his work on stress, he emphasized stress is the emotion. Stress is not the stressor. Two people having a particular stressor can have two different emotional reactions. The negative emotional reaction is the one that's going to make them sick or have disease or other social consequences. So it's the emotion, the anger, the fear, the sadness. And we do a great injustice. There is so much depression, so much addiction, so much mental illness and physical illness in organizations that's connected to repressed emotion.
Absolutely.
And that's what we have to have leaders understand. It's not just about results. Of course, we want them to make money. Of course, we want them to be successful, whatever result they want. I'm not particularly interested in helping them make money, but if that's their goal, okay, let's do that. But let's do it through people and treating people with respect as human beings.
Yeah. And I also hear you say, like, as a leader, I think I hear you say that. As a leader, you're responsible for creating safe spaces. And a safe space can occur when your colleagues feel unconditional love, almost. If you share your emotions, if you share your grief, that you're still seen as the right person for the job. And that's not like you're not good enough anymore.
You know it. You're in Holland. You know Germany. And you know Finland's, the Northern European countries tend to see vulnerability, caring as a weakness. If you show emotion, If you are caring, if you're vulnerable, you are a weak leader, which the research totally contradicts.
There is nothing
in the research that says that is true. You may get a temporary result, but you don't get sustained performance. Yeah. And the levels of engagement are so low, 20% and 80% not being engaged. This is catastrophic.
Yeah. So what I really like about your story is the insight of caring, but also the lesson that your past does not have to affect your future. There's always hope, and you are having the steer wheel in your hands where you want to go. You have impact on your life, so you can be the change. You can be your own change, and you can help.
You have choice.
Exactly.
You can always choose. Which hostage negotiators, that's the way you get a hostage. Yeah. Give choice. Leaders have to stand on the shoulders of people who teach them the right thing. How many leaders are imitating a bully? We have such a problem in the workforce with harassment and bullying and domination because they're imitating leaders that showed them that's the way to do it.
I really love your story and all your interesting insights. You made us think for ourselves also. So thank you a lot for this very interesting time podcast.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
You are very welcome. Ladies, it's been a pleasure.
Je luisterde naar Studio Gehoord. Vond je dit een leuke podcast? Laat dan een review achter bij jouw favoriete podcastplatform. Tot de volgende!